It is Thursday, June the 7th, 2012. I am Steve Groeck, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net, Groeck.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling and MMA news since 1997. And today we're going to get into a plethora of current topics going on in pro wrestling and MMA. And to help me out, I've invited back from a contributor to the Miami Herald, a guy you'll see hopefully we'll link articles to some of his great interviews and some of the articles that he does contribute to the Miami Herald. Today we got Scott Fishman. How are you doing today, Scott?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on again, Steve. I can't believe it's been a year since we last talked.
Yeah, because when we talked last summer, you were preparing for the big WrestleMania 28 was coming your way down in Miami, and I know you were all over it. You're part of the conference, the press conference, and taking part in the fan access. I guess overall, what was your WrestleMania 20 experience like?
Oh, it was just a whirlwind week. I mean, leading up to WrestleMania itself, between the weeks leading up, of course, all the little events, and then of course the press conference that took place outside and the blistering heat and all the events from the art show, which is really cool because I've never actually gotten to attend the show because I've always been flying in after the art show takes place. So it was a really cool experience to see that and see the superstars in a different light and see all the charity work that the superstars and divas and everyone were doing all throughout the weekend and access and just the big event of WrestleMania itself. But then even overshadowing it even more, if it's even possible, is the Raw afterwards, where those Yes chants were really born, and we're still talked about as what a great crowd the Miami crowd was. I mean, I guess you can't take all the credit because there were a lot of out-of-town fans, but, it's a little gold star for us down here.
And, of course, the night after was all the buzz with Brock Lesnar, because that weekend there was all kinds of rumors that, Brock was in town in Miami and that he'd be showing up pretty soon. Of course, he just had departed ways with UFC, and then he shows up on Raw. And we'll talk about Brock and his situation coming up, but thoughts on The Rock coming back. I thought he put on a strong performance. Obviously, he's been pretty much out of the ring for, 7-8 years. He did come back for the Survivor Series with John Cena to tag up against Miz and R-Truth. But I thought, he's in great condition. He came back. Didn't have to come back. Obviously, a big Hollywood star. I think wrestling's in his blood. I think some people are born with it and they just can't get it out of their system. But you thought with that long absence, maybe we'd never see The Rock ever again. I guess your thoughts, seeing The Rock live and the reaction of The Rock and thoughts on, The Rock coming back to WWE.
I mean, the reaction was expected that he got in the big stadium, in Sun Life Stadium. And then the night after, you even felt his impact. Just that, the huge anti-Cena chants that were going on. I mean, it seemed like he hasn't lost a step in the ring. I mean, he you can easily say, yeah, he's just coming back for the big paycheck or whatnot. But looking at the impact he made and the appearances that he made on Raw leading up to the event, I know a lot of fans were disappointed in some of the things that were going on leading up to WrestleMania, as far as his participation and even a little bit on his mic work. They were harping on his mic work a little bit the weeks leading up. But I mean, I thought in the ring he was really good. And then there was talk that he's going to be out for the rest of the year and then come back next year again. So I mean, obviously, when you look at it from a business standpoint, WWE's definitely benefiting from it. I mean, they had the DVD coming out. They made another Rock DVD that came out not too long ago or long after. The announcement was made with The Rock. They definitely took advantage of it with the T-shirt sales and everything. So I definitely think he made that impact, and he probably made an impact more than a lot of other superstars and whatnot have made it, in the weekly appearances that they make. So in that case, I'd say Rock was very, was beneficial for both parties, for The Rock and for WWE. He got to come back and do what he legitimately loved, do what was in his blood, to his family blood to come back in the ring. I mean, maybe he shouldn't have said that, he'll never leave again. I think the fans, took that really to heart as far as that. But maybe he meant, WWE will always be with me somewhere. And then maybe the words he used, he should have changed. But aside from that, I thought Rock did a good job in the ring at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it was a great main event to top off a pretty good WrestleMania. I thought the undercard at times was pretty weak, but obviously the Undertaker and Triple H match was pretty awesome. And, you know, it was all leading up to, you know, Rock Cena. They built it up pretty well. There's already been rumors that they may do Rock Cena 2 next year. There's talk that maybe they'll do The Rock versus Brock Lesnar. Of course, that's probably if Brock Lesnar is still part of the roster come WrestleMania time next year. Obviously, WrestleMania 29 is going to be in New Jersey in early April, which should be interesting with the weather being outdoors and on the East Coast. But I guess if you're the booker, Scott, and you know WrestleMania is coming up for next year, you kind of look ahead because last year we were talking about WrestleMania 28, now we're talking about WrestleMania 29 next year. I don't know if you're the booker, who do you want to see The Rock in the ring with for WrestleMania 29?
I guess you could. I mean, it's an easy route to go with Cena and The Rock, but when they built it up as, you know, once in a lifetime, I don't know if it's actually a good idea to have, again, a rematch between Rock and Cena at this point. I mean, there's talk about The Undertaker and how he will be utilized or if he's done or if he's going to come back. As far as The Rock is being used, it would be interesting, actually, maybe The Rock and Undertaker. A lot of people haven't even thought about that. They're talking about opponents for The Rock and Brock Lesnar and John Cena, but maybe even, you know, The Undertaker to think about the streak and then versus The Rock at WrestleMania. I'm thinking maybe we'll see a Brock and Rock again one-on-one. I mean, if you look back at their match, it was at SummerSlam where Brock Lesnar actually became the champion for the first time. So you can actually, you can revisit that pretty easily. I mean, you're looking at two big names, you know, in different forms of outside of the WWE. You have the UFC fans that were developed and grew with Brock Lesnar being there. And then you look at The Rock in Hollywood. So that would definitely bring an audience. And what I'm, you know, interested in, but I don't know if it'll actually happen, would be, of course, the talk about Stone Cold Steve Austin and CM Punk. What do you think about that? What do you think of the potential of that happening? I don't know.
That's a great segue because I was going to ask you about that. Do you think the Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to return? I personally would think if he was going to do it, if he was going to come back, he probably would have by now. But you probably could have made that argument for The Rock. I mean, as years go along, you think, okay, you know, he's not going to come back. It's been 5, it's been 6, it's been 7, it's been 8 years. I don't know. I think Stone Cold may be different because he did have the neck injury. And I think he seems to be enjoying life. You know, he's doing a CMT series now. He's got movie projects. To me, he seems like he's pretty well set. You know, can they entice him to come back? I think it would be a tremendous situation for WWE if Stone Cold would give him one more match because, as we see with the current roster in WWE, there's not a lot of depth. A lot of things, I mean, this next pay-per-view is the Big Show and Cena. We've already seen that how many times. So, you know, to keep something fresh and new and to stimulate the fans, I think it would be great. But just in my personal opinion, I really don't see Steve Austin coming back. What's your personal opinion?
I mean, I think it can go both ways. I mean, you hear the teasers here and there. He'll throw little teasers in here and there between CM Punk and Austin and him saying that he could, you know, theoretically come back for one more match. So I think you never know. I mean, who would have ever thought Hulk Hogan would come back to the WWE after, you know, with WCW and everything? But it did happen. It was him and Rock. I mean, who would have believed that would have happened again? So, you know, what they say in the wrestling business, never say never. So I think the potential is there for a return, maybe not this year or maybe in the year after. But I think we may see Austin in the ring again. I mean, obviously it'll be a very limited schedule. I mean, maybe in that one match, but I think, you know, the potential is there for it to happen. But like you said, what you mentioned is them turning to the big names, the big stars. I mean, I think now more than ever, it's time to start elevating guys. I mean, one thing that frustrates me to no end is the use of Dolph Ziggler. I mean, you see great performances from him every week and grown up performance. Yet you're burying him, you know, with you have great matches, but then he's losing on a weekly basis. So it's interesting to see that. And you knowing how thin the roster is now with the suspensions and everything else, I mean, it's time, I think, for them to really step up and turn and give these guys an opportunity who are, you know, making, you know, they're getting the opportunity and they're running with the ball. I mean, there's a time where Dolph Ziggler would wrestle on, you know, more than once on a pay-per-view and put on great matches nevertheless. So I think it's time for them to turn, you know, to the young guys as well, you know, have a good mix between, you know, have the big names, but using them in a way where it is effectively elevating guys that they currently have and have a future with, some of them they could see as long-term big names that they can to go to, so they don't have to have this problem every year of, oh, who am I going to get? Who am I going to bring out of the woodwork this year? I mean, you can only bring back so many guys before you're left empty, and then you're really in trouble.
I couldn't agree with you more on Dolph Ziggler. And it seems like every time I do an interview or I talk to somebody in the wrestling world and I say, you know, who's the future stars? And Dolph Ziggler's name always comes up. I remember when I talked to Billy Gunn, because there's been a lot of comparisons to Dolph Ziggler being a younger version of Billy Gunn. And Billy Gunn said he's my favorite wrestler right now. So it is kind of mind-boggling how they at times get him hot and then they kind of just push him down the card. And I think like Wade Barrett was really hot. They kind of pushed him down the card. I agree with you. Kind of in general, the elevation of the younger stars has really been lacking in WWE. But before we go any further, I wanted to go back to WrestleMania real quick, because we're looking, you know, WrestleMania 29 next year. We may not see The Undertaker at all, you know, this year like we didn't last year until, you know, the build up for WrestleMania. We just both took part in the TNA conference call from yesterday. Sting was on to plug Slammiversary. Also plugged Impact is now a weekly 2-hour live show. And one of the more revealing things that they talked about in the press conference was that just how close he came to signing with WWE. We had heard their speculation. We know in the past that Sting and Vince McMahon had conversations. But yesterday he revealed that he was on a scale from 1 to 10, he was a 9, that close to signing with WWE. Now, he wouldn't elaborate and get into, you know, why he didn't exactly sign with WWE or why the two sides could come to an agreement. But I thought he was not really non-committal. I mean, it's for the future, you know, staying with TNA, retiring in TNA. Yeah, as things stands now, yeah, probably. He probably will. But I don't know. Every year he signs a one-year contract. So I don't know, Scott. I would, of all the things in wrestling right now I'd like to see, and Steve Austin wrestling again would be great, but if we could ever get that Undertaker Sting match, I think that would really, really cause a great rush and momentum with WWE.
Oh, I definitely agree. I mean, I think that would be the big stamp of closure for, I think, both men's career. If you look parallels between the two men's careers, I mean, that's the match that everyone was talking about seeing, especially when Sting went to that Crow gimmick back in 1996, 7. And 8, and just looking back at that, and even back then, I'm sure that was a dream match. But now even more, especially when you saw that picture for WrestleMania with the two men, the graphic, and all that internet fodder that came along with on Twitter and Facebook, and everyone having a lot of fun with that, and thinking that those short little clips leading up to what was it, Chris Jericho coming back were actually for Sting. And that would have been a very cool thing. Who's to say that that wasn't the original plan? If he was that close to coming back to the WWE, who's to say that that wasn't planned for Sting? I mean, so who knows? But I definitely think that is the match that the fans want to see. I don't know how it's going to happen or the logistics around it, but it's interesting to say how close he was to signing with WWE. What was the deciding factor in having him stay with TNA? Was it because WWE wanted too much control over the Sting name? I mean, you know, it's been so close to him for so long, and he is the only guy that has not jumped ship, or one of the only guys that has not jumped ship to WWE from WCW and from, you know, all the other big companies. So, I mean, it's interesting to see what would have, you know, made him say, okay, now, you know, I'm going to go back to TNA for another year. I mean, I know WWE probably wants to put him in the Hall of Fame down the line as well. So maybe, you know, one day, who knows, that he'll come back, face The Undertaker and be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. I mean, which would be interesting if that were the case. So I think a lot of fans are wanting that to happen.
I think you asked him about his conditioning and staying in shape, and he was talking about his diet and his training. He's working extra hard now, obviously, since he's older. Stay in shape, keep his cardio up. But as the years go on, Undertaker's not going to wrestle probably much longer. We may, who knows, this next WrestleMania could be his last WrestleMania. We don't even know. It's impossible. You know, he could be done. We don't know. We've heard good things that after the WrestleMania match, he was still in pretty good shape and that he came through it pretty well. But you just never know when you get to that age. You just never know. And for Sting, obviously, you know, his clock is running and Undertaker's clock is running. We'd love to see it. As I said, that's kind of the dream match, I think, Undertaker-Sting. since we've really seen Triple H, or I should say Undertaker, wrestle everybody pretty much in the WWE side. But another aspect that he got into in the conference call, he was asked about, you were mentioning the WWE Hall of Fame, and of course, someday Sting will definitely be in the WWE Hall of Fame, and then it'd be interesting to see him come back and maybe get the Sting DVD with all his matches and his commentary that he could provide. But TNA is going to announce the first inductee to the TNA Hall of Fame at Slammiversary. There's already a lot of speculation on who the first name will be. Sting was asked about, him being the first name, since he really gave TNA a lot of credibility, after he came off the WCW run, he went to TNA, really gave them some star power in the early days of TNA. But when he said first inductee, it shouldn't be him. It should either be Jeff Jarrett or AJ Styles. Two part question here is, who do you think should be the first inductee, and what do you think about TNA implementing a Hall of Fame? I guess kind of early. They're celebrating 10 years, but you think it's kind of early to create a Hall of Fame for TNA?
I think within 10 years, it's an interesting thing to go into, but so many fans are going to compare it to say, oh, they're going to try to be like WWE. But you look at a company like WWE, who's been around, so much longer than TNA, has so much history and going back. But if you are branding an official TNA, TNA Hall of Fame, and you look at, the guys that have contributed and the growth and everything and have grew with the company. I agree actually with Sting and what he says, and he's done so much as far as drawing the spot, putting a little bit more spotlight on TNA. But when you look at the workhorses, you can't look, you have to look at Jeff Jarrett and his efforts in founding the company and moving it forward and taking it to the next level and the role he played. And then of course AJ Styles, their go-to guy when they want to have someone to have a great match with, and you look back and you're seeing all the great matches he has. He was, he's won every single championship within TNA. He's broken the records for, the TNA in the short 10 years that they've been around. So I think either AJ Styles is Jeff Jarrett are the two main guys that you would think as time goes on, if you're picking an inaugural induction to the WWE Hall of Fame. The TNA Hall of Fame. See, I'm confused again. But the TNA Hall of Fame. And then, my sentimental pick, though, I'd say would probably be Sharkboy. He's a sentimental pick for me.
Now, a name that was thrown out at the press conference was Bob Carter. You could make a case that wasn't for Bob Carter, that TNA wouldn't be around today. So I thought that was interesting that he's, he basically came in and saved the company. It was a sinking ship. Obviously they started off with the weekly 2-hour pay-per-views on Wednesday night for $9.95. And obviously the business model was backwards in that they didn't have television. They were obviously a company losing a lot of money, and the Carters came in and bought the company and the rest is history. But, I agree with you. I think it probably either should be AJ Styles or Jeff Jarrett. Do we think TNA? I know when you say TNA, those two names probably jump in your head like right away. So you'd think it'd be one or the other. And well, I guess we'll find out at Slammiversary. And I'd like to see a little more information about the Hall of Fame. It would be interesting to see if they could create maybe a physical Hall of Fame, because we're talking about WWE creating a physical Hall of Fame. And obviously they've been at Universal Studios for a long time, maybe, creating a memorabilia section at Universal Studios so that you could see the wrestlers. Memorabilia.
Having a little attraction. That's a good idea, actually.
So I was hoping that, we would hear a little more information about, they did put the press release out about it, but maybe eventually they could talk about, creating a physical area where you can go and see great matches, memorabilia, interviews, something like a physical Hall of Fame. I think that's one of the criticisms of WWE's Hall of Fame is there's no physical Hall of Fame. It's just, whoever we say is in the Hall of Fame, here it is, And
yeah, that's true. Even going back to WrestleMania 24, I think. I don't know. One of the times when there was a press conference and asked me Shane McMahon, he's like, that's in the works. And now you look years later and it's still being talked about where it's going to be. And actually, I remember Orlando being the one of the places that they would think of having a Hall of Fame. But going back to the TNA and learning more about it, my question is what are you getting? Are you getting a Hall of Fame ring? Are you getting a plaque? And maybe they can go in as well into, what went into deciding who became, the TNA, will they go back to, shouldn't it be, you know, up to the fans maybe having a ballot every year similar to other, you know, with other sports where fans will be able to vote in who they think this deserves to be in it as well, I think would be something they can go into in explaining more about this.
I think that's a great point because we've already seen with the weekly two-hour impacts we saw in the first episode where fans could decide who was going to face Devon for the TV title. Of course, they picked Jeff Hardy, excuse me. I think that'd be a great idea to say, okay, you guys decide who should be the first inductee into the TNA Hall of Fame. But they definitely need to have more information in terms of how many people are going to get in every year. Is it going to be just yearly where they'll announce it at Slammiversary, kind of what we do yearly with WWE, where they'll announce it ahead of WrestleMania? Are they going to announce people being inducted during the year as well, maybe something for Bound for Glory as well? So I think it seems like it's an idea they came up with, and they maybe haven't thought about all the intimate details of the situation. But maybe we'll learn more at Slammiversary when they make the first official announcement who's going to be in the Hall of Fame. But I definitely like your idea of the interaction with fans, letting them decide on who should be in the Hall of Fame. But let's talk a little about TNA Weekly now. Of course, we've seen last Thursday they did the first weekly summer experiment going live from 8 to 10. I thought it was a pretty good show overall. Definitely a better show than I've seen a lot of times in Impact. Kind of a hit and miss show at times. Sometimes makes you really scratch your head. Some of the segments don't make a lot of sense. Sometimes they just kind of throw a lot of things against the wall and hope something sticks. I think that's probably more of Vince Russo's booking than anything. But I kind of like the show last week that we left the show with a cliffhanger. We got this compelling storyline with Dixie having an affair with AJ or at least implying that's the direction they're going. I guess your thoughts overall on Impact going weekly live, what do they need to do kind of maybe to maintain that weekly live format, you know, in terms of ratings, what do they need to do to kind of connect with fans, and what's your overall thought on Dixie and the AJ storyline right now?
Well, I was actually away on my honeymoon when it actually started. This whole thing started, and I'm not actually quite sure of where they're going with it or what they're doing with it. But I thought it was, I mean, it's definitely interesting, like you said, having that cliffhanger. And the last few weeks, I think, have really been an improvement for TNA from a rest, you know, giving them more wrestling on the shows and just having a little bit more build to more interest to their storylines. And I think Bobby Roode's done it. You know, they've done a good job with Bobby Roode and building him up and with that as well. And it's sad that, you know, they have such competition. I mean, I think today even they're gonna have some huge competition with the Heat game going on, so that's pretty bad. So I think, you know, the next couple of weeks hopefully it'll be a good experiment for them to see where they can go with it. I mean, the time slot move, and it's a lot of moving around. I mean, one thing about TNA is the consistency hasn't been their strong suit as far as delivering every week, and that's the thing they have to do right now is deliver and changing things around. It's good to experiment here and there and see what's work. I do see what works. I definitely enjoy the that first segment that Dixie Carter talked about on the conference call and that different look and the more candid, more or less scripted as far as the talking it goes and the backstage segments and showing things outside of the Impact Zone. I think the live part of the show definitely has helped. I mean, I mean you look at the crowd and the feel of the crowd, and just having that live energy is great. I mean, it'd be awesome if they could go on the road, you know, and do this every week or at least once a month or once every 2 months. But, you know, for now, I mean, I'll take what I can get as far. The live show is definitely great from that standpoint. And also, you know, spoilers not getting out. I think that helps. And you know, and you don't know what's going to happen. And you can change. They can change the show if they want to. I mean, the script, if something goes wrong or if they decide to go in another direction, they have that option. And, you know, if they want to decide to change the pay-per-view, I think this gives them a lot of different ways to go, and it creates a little bit more unpredictability instead of, you know, knowing what's going to happen. Okay, this week we already know what's going to happen because I read the spoiler, so I'm going to decide to watch. And I think this way it gives, you know, the fans a chance to decide for themselves rather than hearing, oh, this match, you know, was bad because I saw it live or I was in the Impact Zone. So I think the live aspect is great. I'm not sure about moving it from 8 to 9 and how that's going to benefit them. I mean, you talk about the content that they have on their shows a lot, might be directed more to a 9 to 11 type of deal, but I guess time will tell. I mean, it's only the second week right now. to see what kind of direction they're going. I mean, they've been moving towards, it's been interesting to see that moving towards, instead of promoting their pay-per-views, it seems like they'd be promoting their shows, their TV shows more than their pay-per-views and going in a different direction. But I remember Dixie was speaking how she's not a fan of the 12 pay-per-view plan that they have set in place, which I totally agree with. I think, I mean, breaking down the pay-per-views to doing like six or so a year even or would be great for them. I mean, as far as building up, you know, the storylines and making people want to order the shows rather than, you know, saying, oh, it's another pay-per-view. I guess we should have some, you know, matches decided now. I mean, you look at the card for Slammiversary and it's just been thrown together. It seems the other matches on the card besides the main ones, which seems like the direction they have been going. So it'll be interesting to see how that changes as well as time goes on. A lot of changes happening behind the scenes as well. See if that plays into anything. But I've been a fan of where they've been going the last couple of weeks from the wrestling standpoint. I think they have an amazing roster. Guys like Austin Aries, I love what they're doing with him. And I actually enjoy the whole gut check thing as well. So different things they're doing, I'm really liking. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I agree with you in terms of eliminating some pay-per-views. I don't know what the exact number is. It seems like if you have 3 or 4 months of build, then you have a pay-per-view that makes sense to me. I don't know if I'll go down to 3 or 4 a year. Probably not. I think Dixie's talking maybe going down to 9 or 10. Maybe eliminate a couple of the pay-per-views. Maybe space them out a little bit better. They have to really get rid of that Hard Justice name. I never liked it. I think it's one of the worst names for a pay-per-view. I mean, especially when it's TNA Hard Justice.
Yeah, well, we have TNA enough, you get the whole idea. But then you go with the Hard Justice route, and then people are going to order it thinking it's something else.
And I remember one year they were talking about making adopting a pay-per-view called Fuel. I remember that, you know, being TNA, you know, nonstop action wrestling. Glad they didn't go in that direction. They do have some, I guess, really both companies' names that are not the best for pay-per-views, Over the Limit, Over the Edge. It's not like almost the same name, you know, they just change a few words here. But I agree. I think it would be a good idea for TNA to cut down on the pay-per-views. And you were talking a little bit about ratings. We got this week's rating, or actually last week's rating, was a 0.9. I know some people were like, they're losing their audience. It's a time change. It's going to take an adjustment. People are used, I mean, their core fans are used to watching Impact Wrestling from 9 to 11. And now that they're on from 8 to 10, I was looking at the quarter hours for the first number, and the first quarter hour was a 0.72 of last week's show. So it's a big adjustment moving into a new time slot. That's why I think it's fair that Spike is going to give them 12 or 13 weeks, and we'll see where they are at the end of this run to see if it really justifies keeping them into a live format. And I think in 2012, they have to be live. Even if they decide, we're going to keep the time slot, or even if they move back to 9 to 11, I think they definitely got to stay live. That's the direction to go, especially as you say, with Impact, with the spoilers out there, the internet, smart fans out there. They know, they get the results. They know what's on the show. That's the direction they have to go, regardless of what happens in this 12-week trial run as we progress along here. But talking about ratings, because last week Raw's number was a 2.7, and it was Memorial Day, granted. And this week they went back up to a 2.9, but I think it really illustrates the situation WWE is in right now. They're not creating new stars. There's not really compelling storylines. I think a lot of the characters are bland, boring. We're seeing Cena versus Big Show yet again. As you were talking about before, they have not elevated Dolph Ziggler like they should be doing. I think CM Punk has gotten a little stale. Remember, he was super hot last summer. Now he seems like he's just another champion on the show. I mean, Y2J has really amounted to nothing in his return. And then, you know, Scott, come July 23rd, WWE Raw is going to be live every single week for 3 hours. And, boy, it's really going to expose their roster right now. They're going to have to really make some new stars, some really different to dynamic characters. But I don't know, what was your reaction when you heard 3 hour Raws, and what are you kind of anticipating for them going to a 3 hour format every week?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't believe that they're actually going in that direction. I mean, I believe Sting said in the conference call commenting about the third hour. I mean, Nitro went to 3 hours when when wrestling was hot, when, you know, when everyone was watching and everything. And now at WWE, if they're trying to figure out what's going on with the ratings and everything and viewing habits and things, I don't know if 3 hours is much of an overkill. I mean, think about going back to WCW. You're looking at when Nitro was at 3 hours, they also had Thunder for 2 hours on, you know, during the week as well, and then on Saturday night, and then they had the Sunday show, I believe, still going on. So it was pretty much a lot of overkill with everything. But then they had WWE going on. They had the competition. So it'll be interesting to see how 3 hours will do. I mean, you look back at the 3 hour shows, and I mean, I believe it's always the 8 p.m. hour that's always, that most of the time, more times than not, is the lower hour of viewing. So I don't know how it's going to benefit them much. Hopefully it'll improve maybe even the pace of the matches and giving more guys time to show, you know, to get given the spotlight a little bit more. So if that is the case, then maybe it is a good idea to give them a shot. But they're going to have to be a little bit more dynamic in their programming and having people keep interest, because it's hard enough to stay interested in the show a lot of times during the week for 2 hours on Mondays than it's going to be for 3 hours. So, like you said, I mean the talent roster is thin right now with a lot of guys not leaving, but, you know, being suspended and whatnot or for other reasons. So I don't know if the timing is that great for WWE. I mean, I'm sure they probably didn't expect to have all these guys be gone when they did go to 3 hours, but you can definitely see a little bit of panic whenever you see the announcement of Vince McMahon comes this week on Raw. I mean, when I read that, I was like, oh man, that's panic to me. Whenever they decide to bring Vince McMahon back to television, you can think of they're trying something. So it'll be interesting to see what they're going to do with the 3 hours, where they're going to go with it. It's not going to be like a whole NWO thing where there was an invasion and they'll have the first hour be dedicated to them or a faction so I'm not sure. I mean, you can go back to have the Hat Tough Enough at 8 o'clock from 8 to 9. They use that, but I don't know what kind of ideas or what plans they have, but they're going to have to do something dynamic to keep the interest up as far as for a whole 3 hours every week. I don't know how permanent this is going to end up being, but they say it's, you know, a little bit, you know, permanent, but there's a lot of competition on Monday nights. So maybe they feel like if they can get them interested at the 8 p.m. hour, that they'll stick around and not watch the shows from 9 to 11 shows on the other channel. So we'll see how this experiment pans out.
Yeah. I can see them say it's an experiment rather than a permanent change. If they already been building, this is a permanent change. It's going to be 8 to 11. And I think what WWE gets out of it, obviously they're going to get more money from USA Network to have a third hour. That's a plus, but you definitely are going to overexpose your talent. I think your talent's already overexposed as they are. When you have 2 hours of Raw, you have 2 hours of SmackDown. I mean, the brand extension has really, you know, fallen by the wayside. We're not even going to do a draft this year, because what's the point of a draft when you see characters on both shows anymore? So I believe the 3 hour format for this coming week on the 11th was originally going to be a draft show. And I believe there was a show in April, the 3 hour show. That was originally going to be the draft. Now they've kind of given up on the draft idea, because really it's pointless to draft anybody. And not to mention, you have half your main event rosters out right now. You have, of course, Randy Orton is suspended. He just said today he's got 50 more days on his suspension. We saw what happened with Chris Jericho in Brazil. Rey Mysterio is still out. Evan Bourne is out, even though he's not a main event player. Wade Barrett is injured. We just saw Sin Cara come back, but obviously he's not a main event player. So with the roster situation as it is, it's really dangerous right now to go 3 hours. You know, you have superstars, you have NXT. That's a lot of programming per week. And then at the end of the month, they expect you to pay $44.95 or $54.95 for a pay-per-view. I don't know. That's a lot to ask of a wrestling fan, especially when you're, as you were mentioning from the Sting press conference, he said, you know, Nitro extended 3 hours when Nitro was a hot show. Raw is not a hot show, and it's not been a hot show for a long time now. Very dangerous. And I'd like to see a little more information. What was the thought behind this? Was this WWE's idea? Was this USA Network's idea? Because I think if you went back to the Spike conference call with Dixie, Scott, there was talk that Impact was going to go to 3 hours.
Right.
She actually mentioned that they were asked to go to 3 hours, and she said it's not in their best interest right now to do it, even though she would say that she'd like to see a little more programming and maybe we'll see some specials, or maybe we'll see TNA Gut Check become a regular series like Tough Enough, but maybe wisely so. And in Dixie's case, she said, no, I don't think a three-hour format would be good for us right now. But yet we're going to see that with Raw, so it's going to be real interesting to see how that plays out. I don't know, just one thing that came to mind when I'm thinking about going for Raw to go back 3 hours is, how about Jim Ross being brought back? Because let's face it, for 3 hours of Cole and Lawler.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't know if I could take that.
They're so overexposed in 2 hours. Why not bring back JR at least for an hour or something?
I think even if they made that one of the hours, you know, FCW guy, you know, FCW show, I think that would be interesting. You know, they're doing the whole revamping of FCW and everything. And Jim Ross has been a part of it and doing the announcing and with Dusty Rhodes and bringing me back to the old days. So I think going back, you know, doing that for the hour might be a little bit more interesting. But on top of even the three-hour show, one thing we didn't even discuss is the fact that they want to launch a network, you know, around this time. Yeah. You know, July is going to be the three-hour show, and you're going to have you're working on a network, and you're trying to launch it by October or November of this year. I mean, that sounds pretty difficult. I mean, it seems a lot going on at once.
I've heard that might be the backup plan. If Raw really bombs in terms of ratings for 3 hours, which – I don't know how it cannot. I don't know what their expectations are. It would have been interesting going back to the Spike conference call when they announced that Impact was going 3 hours. You know, what's the network's criteria? What are they expecting in terms of ratings for Impact to be, you know, a live 2 hour show weekly? What's the expectations from USA Network's perspective in terms of Raw being 3 hours? You know, really haven't heard anything about that. Are they happy with 2.7s? 2.8, 2.9. I guess they are right now because, you know, they green-lighted this change in 3 hours, and it's going to be interesting. And, of course, the backup plan for the network, if the network does get launched, and the backup plan for the Raw show, if it bombs in ratings, as I was alluding to before I got off to a tangent there, that if Raw doesn't do well 3 hours, the first hour of Raw could become a part of the WWE network. So if you wanted to see hour number one, you tune into the WWE Network, and then hours 2 and 3 would be on USA as usual. So that's just, something
that's kind of similar to what the UFC does in a way, with they have the fights going on one channel, you know, the preliminaries, and then they have the pay-per-view leading into the pay-per-view. So it's kind of like that, only on two different networks as opposed to a pay-per-view in a network.
Right. Now, when we talk about talent in WWE, we have to talk about Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar did come back. You saw the big buzz down in Miami when Lesnar returned. Really hot star coming back. We've not seen him in WWE in quite a while. And then he came in and feuded right away with John Cena. He put John Cena over. We've heard about what happened with that angle at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, what happened, what didn't happen, a blow-up backstage. Brock Lesnar shows up at a UFC event. Dana White says, yes, there was more to it than him just showing up at the event. All kinds of speculation that maybe Brock wants to go back to UFC. Obviously, WWE wants him for WrestleMania next year. We've already heard, you know, Brock versus Rock is a possibility. We are expecting that it's going to be Brock Lesnar versus Triple H at SummerSlam. But long term, there's a lot of speculation, Scott, that he could go back to UFC. And I guess the big question from a WWE perspective is, you know, can they count on Brock? Obviously, the situation seems to be kind of a tenuous situation as is, even though he's got the most lucrative contract ever. I mean, for a limited dates deal to get his millions of dollars that he's got, seems like he should be very, very happy, but yet seems like he may be just using UFC as a leveraging tool against WWE. But I don't know, Scott, what's your thoughts on Brock Lesnar and maybe his longevity in the company right now?
I mean, there was interest, even when going back when he was still part of UFC and the stare down with The Undertaker and how much interest there was about him returning to the WWE, and then he actually did come back. And I think WWE may have shot themselves in the foot and limiting having so much leverage, giving Brock Lesnar so much leverage in the appearances that he made. It seems like they during the negotiations, they were like, all right, Brock, what do you want? We'll just give you whatever. You know, it was almost similar to what he said on the, you know, in his little promo that he cut on it. And then, As far as that is just his conditioning and being back. I mean, I think it was a mistake to have him lose so quickly to John Cena. I mean, I think they should have kept the momentum going and using him as a killer and everything like that. And then I don't think it was smart. My booking way of doing things would have had actually Cena winning at defeating The Rock at WrestleMania, if you're going to have him and then have him lose against Brock Lesnar, because you're building Brock Lesnar up, you know, as the weeks go on. If you are building him up for WrestleMania next year, and he, if he has such limited dates to work with, I'm not sure if it was in the best interest of going the route that they did with him losing to John Cena, losing that momentum. But one thing that did was interesting to come of all this is having Paul Heyman return to WWE television and sort of being like the mouthpiece for him, and how they're, you know, a way of them getting around Lesnar's not working that many dates is having Paul Heyman come out and talk and create interest. And it's, you know, it's good to have Paul back, because you know, he's always creating some, you know, interest, and he's great on the mic, and it goes perfectly, of course, with the ECW DVD getting released. So that also comes into play. And now there's talk of the pay-per-view and No Way Out. They're going to have Triple H come back. So that, like you said, that might play into seeing Triple H versus Brock Lesnar. But I think Brock in the WWE did create a little bit more, you know, did give the show a little bit more of an edge. If you look back and just the what went on with Cena and Brock Lesnar at the start of Raw, you know, when Brock Lesnar first came, and him and Triple H and what happened with that, and supposedly breaking his arm. And I think that, I mean, that really, I thought that, you know, he was creating interest and giving WWE that edge that maybe has been lacking since last year with the whole CM Punk angle. So there's so many ways to go with Brock Lesnar. So the question is, how willing is he able to, you know, how willing is he to continue and going? I mean, I'm sure The Rock, he seems more open appearances for things than Brock Lesnar does, at least from now at this point. I mean, I'm not sure how Brock Lesnar will play out through the rest of the year, but you're going to keep him off TV till next year and everything. I mean, I don't know how much of a good idea it was to have him sign this year then. But, I mean, definitely when he is on, he's on the show. He from a physical standpoint, he definitely has that. And then having now Heyman as the mouthpiece, which I think is a wise move for him, I think it creates that interest. So we'll see. I mean, if this is where the route they go for SummerSlam, I think there will be a lot of interest for that. And there was talk about him returning to the UFC, but I'm not sure how valid those reports or those rumors or that all that talk is. I mean, it might be just a way of, like you said, of him getting leverage. So we'll see how it plays out as far as that is concerned. But I think Lesnar did add a lot to the show when he was on.
I think it's interesting because the last Brock Lesnar UFC fight, he didn't look good at all to me, and it kind of looked like it was the end of his UFC career. I mean, there's a lot of speculation. He's just using UFC as a leveraging tool. I don't know what more Brock Lesnar could want. You know, maybe he's upset that he had to put John Cena over, but it sounds like they had pretty much told him ahead of time that he'd be putting John Cena over. I agree with your thought there on why would you have Brock Lesnar, this UFC champion, legitimate fighting champion, come in and lose to John Cena? And on the other hand, I guess if you look from WWE's perspective, is we don't, you know, right now Brock isn't really one of our guys. You know, he was gone for so long. You know, he complained he didn't like the road schedule. He wanted out of his deal. He didn't sign anything just to get the heck out of there. He didn't like being on the road, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, he signed that contract that allowed him to get out. He went to football, didn't work out for him. He went to UFC. But, you know, at the same time, it's really puzzling because, you know, if you are bringing him back in to punish him, if you just put over your guys, what value does Brock Lesnar have if he keeps losing all his matches? You know, what direction do you go? Because I thought one of the more interesting things they could do is either have Brock win the WWE Championship or The Rock winning the WWE Championship prior to WrestleMania and have that maybe a championship match, even though that match on paper really doesn't need a championship, just like Cena versus Rock didn't need a championship belt to decide it. But just, you know, have something a little more, something different twist at this year's, next year's WrestleMania, throw in the WWE Championship. But, you know, they want this direction where, you know, Brock's already lost. I think you could already argue that he lost a lot of his momentum. The way they use him, you know, very sparingly on television. Of course, we're so conditioned, Scott, that we expect to see all our favorite superstars on a weekly basis. And now we're having this, I mean, it's different with Undertaker because the Undertaker is the Undertaker. Undertaker's, you know, he's the Undertaker. He kind of goes beyond all the rules of wrestling. But for Brock now, you know, he's here, he loses, he quits, He'll be here. He may not be here. Maybe he'll be back for this week's show. He probably should be back for the July 23rd show when they go 3 hours if they're trying to load that show up. But I don't know, Scott. It seems like he just loses momentum when he already loses to Cena. And then I don't know from week to week if he's going to be on the show, what they're going to do with him. Maybe this investment in Brock, and you know, we've heard upwards of $5 million for a very limited contract. I mean, what more could Brock really want other than maybe, you know, maybe beating Cena? But, you know, the real question here is are they going to get money for their investment? We saw Extreme Rules was up a little bit, but it wasn't, you know, didn't jack up the pay-per-view buy rates. I don't know, Scott, are they going to get their money's worth out of the Brock Lesnar investment?
I mean, that's very interesting. I mean, certainly Jimmy Johns is getting a good end of the deal when he wears those shirts on TV. I mean, I don't know what his endorsement deal with them is. But, I mean, it remains to be seen. I mean, I think it's too early. He didn't make that many appearances. He had that one pay-per-view match, and now there's talk of SummerSlam and seeing where that goes. But it's interesting when you look at the dynamic of that and then seeing how UFC, they see these stars coming, you know, every few months that they like and they enjoy. But they with them, they have the star power to do that now. They have the drawing power that where WWE needs, you know, to build more stars and to change the main event up. You can't see John Cena in the main event every week. And so it's good to have Brock, you know, a guy like Brock Lesnar, established name, you know, in the mix if he's used correctly. And if you're just going to throw him with a John Cena again, I mean, I don't know if that's going to be as interesting as seeing him against someone else that fans are interested in watching. But if it is indeed a $5 million contract, I don't know if it's going to be very difficult to make it back, make back that investment. It's almost like you're making a $200 million movie and then it bombing at the box office a la John Carter. So I don't know if this is going to be a whole John Carter situation or not, but there was a potential there. There was a lot of interest, but if he's only going to make a certain amount of appearances, it's definitely challenging to make that money back.
I guess one thought would be, because we see all the main stars every single week, they do get stale. I mean, you could really argue that John Cena's character has been stale for a long time. Obviously, I was talking about CM Punk. You know, he was really the anti-authority character, and now he's, you know, fused with Laurinaitis. But certainly he's lost a lot of momentum where he was, you know, last summer, you know, where he's talking about leaving. He leaves the WWE Championship. He shows up at odd events and conventions and things like that. But I just don't know if this Brock Lesnar experiment was the right way to go. As you said, you know, we're talking about the limited dates, and if they're not going to put him over anybody, I would have really thought it would make a lot of sense for Lesnar just get a little bit of a Goldberg push, come in and destroy everybody, and then lead up to, you know, Brock versus Lesnar, or even Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker, you know, undefeated Brock Lesnar against the streak, something like that. But, you know, that's not the direction they're going to go right now. I guess time will tell if this is really you're gonna get bang for their buck here. I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know, they're not making the new stars right now. They have to try something different. You only do so much with Orton. You only do so much with Cena. You know, we've seen the main stars get stale. So you try Brock Lesnar to try to spike things up a little bit. I know Vince McMahon was very upset with Brock that he showed up at the UFC event. Nobody in the WWE knew about it. And then obviously Dana White admitted that it was more to him than just showing up and saying hi, because, you know, Brock doesn't do anything just for the heck of doing it. He's not a very spontaneous guy, but it'll be interesting as the months and weeks progress if they do pull off Triple H versus Lesnar and then what the future holds. But we'll make a prediction right here, Scott. Do you think, well, two questions. Do you think Brock will make it to WrestleMania, and do you think Brock Lesnar will return to UFC this year?
Well, given his past performances leading up to the UFC, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I don't see what he has left to show or prove. I mean, I guess prove that he still has it, but then that would make no sense of what happened, you know, in the last fight. So I don't know if in his best interest from a health perspective, I don't think it. I mean, we're going to be seeing him back in the octagon, but maybe for other opportunities, he sees him maybe as an analyst or just being a, you know, like a Shawn Michaels type, you know, goodwill ambassador for the UFC. I mean, maybe Dana's looking at him like that. The verdict's still out on how this deal is set up and what if WWE's just gonna, you know, use all of his appearances that, you know, leading up to SummerSlam and then beyond that, leading up to the end of the year. But I'm not sure if he actually, yeah, like you said, if he's going to be making it to WrestleMania, if given the lead up and all the talk and everything that's been going on. But I think we're going to probably see Lesnar in a WWE ring again, obviously against probably Triple H, like you said. But you know, now there's talk. You know, you see a guy like Ryback. Maybe that was the way they should have went, like you mentioned, of having him, you know, beat up everyone and just be this big monster type, and then having him face leading up to WrestleMania. Maybe that was the route they should have went. But we'll see how this plays out at the end of the year. I don't think he's going to be back in the UFC in the octagon in competition anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he'll be go back to UFC. I'd be surprised if he did, but then again, he said we saw Hulk Hogan come back. Anything happens in this wacky world of sports entertainment. You know, I know UFC doesn't like to be part of a sports entertainment category, in that they're obviously a shoot fight, but it will be interesting to see how things play out with Brock and obviously with a 3-hour weekly format with Raw, what they do to you know, spice things up. They definitely need to spice things up with Raw. But before we wrap up, Scott, coming up here, Slammiversaries is actually this weekend. Hard to believe. Snuck up pretty quickly here. Obviously, TNA is celebrating 10 years. I remember, I'm sure you do too, remember all the weekly 2-hour pay-per-views from $9.95. Them going to the Fox Sports Net at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoons, being preempted in a lot of areas for other programming. We've seen them go to Saturday nights on Spike. They've changed times. They've changed dates. We've seen them take Kurt Angle, fell into their lap, do something with Samoa Joe. We've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly with TNA. I guess maybe some perspective on TNA 10 years and maybe the impact they have or not made in professional wrestling.
Well, I think it's very, very cool to look back and then see and, you know, watch a company from the start. I mean, it's very, you know, especially in this time, having the opportunity to watch a company grow and turn into something that you see every week on a network is pretty cool to see. I mean, starting out, I remember going to a friend's house and watching the 2-hour shows on Wednesdays and you know, for $9.95, which was cool, and seeing all the guys they would bring back from WCW and, you know, I was still mourning the loss of WCW. So seeing all these guys was great, and it gave me that whole feel, that void that I think was missing. And then obviously, and then also actually taking a road trip to, I remember taking a road trip to Nashville from down here in South Florida. It was during spring break, and then making the drive with my friend and you go to the fairgrounds and how TNA was so welcoming. It was such a homey atmosphere. It was a family atmosphere. They had the little tickets that you would get, and they just ripped the little tickets that are like something you get at a raffle. Like that was their tickets, so little raffle tickets. And then before the show, I remember being taken to where the guys ate together, and you see like Vince Russo eating with Jeff Jarrett and all the production guys, and some of the wrestlers are eating at this place called the White Trash Cafe. And I was like, this is amazing. This is awesome. This is like camaraderie and them working for something. Of course, that was a night they had the Insane Clown Posse, so that just shows you what the point they were at right there. And then you had Chris Harris, who was on the verge, and I was so big on and hoping he'd win the NWA championship at the time against Jeff Jarrett, and just wanting that, and just now seeing what's happened over the years and seeing James Storm now break out and be the guy out of America's Most Wanted to actually come out, even though everyone thought that it would be Chris Harris, and seeing everyone just come and all the big names, and as TNA got, you know, more well known and more established, and just seeing them grow, and then actually going to their first, I actually had the opportunity to also go to their first 3-hour pay-per-view event in Orlando in November. That was the one with, of course, the Macho Man made the shocking appearance, and it had Jeff Hardy and you know, coming back, and then so it was really cool. And then Sting, and seeing the impact that he had, and you couldn't believe that Sting was coming, and then that little tease when Hulk Hogan was going to come, and then he didn't end up coming. And then he came, ended up coming and making a return and staying till today with Eric Bischoff. And so many things. I mean, TNA gets a lot of criticism, but they've had some amazing matches over the years. And Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe, and I know I haven't been a huge fan of how they used Samoa Joe, but he's had some amazing matches. And you look back on the X Division and so many awesome things about that, a lot of competitors and that, and seeing the growth of AJ Styles And one thing they haven't, you know, been able to do, unfortunately, is, you know, make AJ Styles and Abyss and all them, you know, just big household names. And hopefully, you know, they're going to turn the corner, you know, as time goes on. There's a lot of work to be done, as Sting says. But, you know, it seems like they have a lot of hardworking people, people that want, you know, want the company to succeed. I love, you know, competition is good, obviously, so you want them to succeed. Which what Dixie said. I mean, you didn't think that the company was going to last 10 months, let alone 10 years. So, you know, it's like the little, you know, the little company that could, that grew into, you know, I think they've done, you know, they've made a lot of strides in the past couple of years, you know, a lot of growing pains. You know, but they did turn the corner. I mean, they grew from, like you said, in the Nashville fairgrounds, and then to see what it became, moving networks and the Spike TV, and now being established and being in 120 countries or whatever it is worldwide, and traveling, going on, you know, traveling on the road every, you know, so I think there's a lot of good with the bad. And I think, you know, they get a lot of criticism for all the bad stuff, but, you know, overall, I mean, I've enjoyed TNA more times than not. I mean, they've had some bad, you know, run-ins, but for the most part, I've enjoyed, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they come about. Hopefully, you know, I hope they stick around, in my opinion, you know, for another 10 years and see where they, it'll be interesting to look back and see how they grow from this point. But, you know, I'm being optimistic about it.
Yeah, I used to do a hotline in 2004, 2005 time period, and we were glowing about TNA at that time because they were so heavy on X Division, something different. They had a lot of great stars. They were, you know, always bringing in different stars. I mean, went back to those two-hour formats for the pay-per-views. They were always bringing in somebody different that you didn't expect. I agree with a lot of things that you said there. But, again, at the end of it, you know, TNA has kind of been hit a dry patch, I guess. I mean, they've maintained the same ratings number. They're not growing at the house shows. They're not really grown. I mean, you see some of the attendance figures. You kind of scratch your head with some of the talent they have. They can't, you know, draw a big house at an event. They have some of the biggest stars, Kurt Angle, Sting, some of the bigger names in wrestling right now. I guess, as you said, overall, you take the good with the bad. Obviously, you reflect on 10 years, and I agree. It is nice to see there is competition. There's a place for other wrestlers to go, other women to wrestle in. When Gail Kim's not happy, she can go back to TNA. That's always good. Mm-hmm. It obviously gives the fans something to watch other than WWE. Because let's face it, if it was just the WWE, we'd be complaining even more. You know, some people didn't like WCW. And then when WCW disappeared, boy, did we miss WCW.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
At the end of Nitro, it was so bad. But then when it was gone, it's like there wasn't anything for a while until TNA came along, gave you that void. There's another outlet. There's other pro wrestling out there. And obviously, we should also mention, you know, Ring of Honor is 10 years, too, and they're still around. And they don't have the funding that TNA has. They don't have the ability to retain their stars. And a lot of the stars they've had have gone on to bigger and better things, such as CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. And you, of course, talking about Samoa Joe. They all came from Ring of Honor. We're probably going to see future stars come from Ring of Honor. They got Claudio Castagnoli, Chris Hero is coming up too. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, as you kind of compare, you know, TNA with Ring of Honor, the type of impacts they have made on the pro wrestling business overall. But obviously, this is the Slammiversary weekend. The big main event is Sting versus Bobby Roode. And as we end our podcast today, who do you got in this one? You got Roode or you got Sting winning the championship at Slammiversary?
I'll go with Sting. I mean, Roode has had his long title reign, so I think TNA probably under the mindset of, you know, maybe it's time to have Sting win the big one again. And I mean, he's I think Sting's been great in the ring. I mean, on the mic as well. I think the last year, I think he's really shown that he's invested in TNA. I mean, he vouched for, you know, Bobby Roode apparently and pushed for him apparently in the conference call. He mentioned how, you know, Roode, he really wanted Roode to succeed and be out there and given the opportunity that he's been given. So he's lobbied for that. So I won't be surprised to see Bobby Roode retain the championship. But I think to get that feel good moment for the whole, you know, the big anniversary, I think we're going to see Sting take the gold from Bobby Roode at least this Sunday.
And of course, if you want to hear that conference call, we do have the audio up available at Gerwick.net. You go to the front page and check that out. And of course, Sunday is Slammiversary. If you are not going to order the show, or even if you are going to order the show, you can follow along with us. We'll have live coverage of the pay-per-view at 8 p.m. Eastern on Sunday night. And I want to thank Scott Fishman, contributor to the Miami Herald, for joining us today. Scott, before you go, plug your Twitter, your Facebook, and where can fans check out your work?
All right. Well, on Twitter, I'm always tweeting during shows, and maybe a little bit delayed because I am a DVR person, but it's S as in Scott, M as in Mark, Fishman, F-I-S-H-M-A-N. And no, I am not the Spike TV Scott Fishman. A lot of people have gotten me confused in the TNA offices over the years that I'm the Spike TV guy, Scott Fishman. I actually got to meet him at an event a couple years ago, which is kind of funny that we were sitting almost next to each other. So I thought it was pretty humorous. But no, it's S as in Scott, M as in Mark, and Fishman, and always tweeting about wrestling. And then also the Miami Herald website is www.miamiherald.com/sports/wrestling. So it's www.miamiherald.com/sports/wrestling. And we also, we're also continuing our Facebook page, which we started leading up to WrestleMania 28, just give fans, you know, answering any questions they have while they're in town and just promoting a lot of the work. So we've been continuing to do that. If fans want to do that, they can like the Miami Herald. Well, it's not a Miami Herald Facebook page. It's basically our Facebook page, which is a you can search it under WWE WrestleMania 28 and then Miami. So it's WWE WrestleMania 28 Miami. So we're always talking about different things on there as well.
Well, we appreciate it. We definitely encourage fans to check you out as well. Of course, we're friends on Twitter, and of course we I see a lot of your tweets and always appreciate what Scott adds and his thoughts and perspectives on the shows. And we want to thank him for coming on today, Scott. And I make a pledge right now that we'll definitely have you back on before WrestleMania 29.
Yes, I was going to say, hopefully a year doesn't go by before that happens.
Yeah, we'll definitely have him back on shortly. Always enjoyed listening to Scott's thoughts and perspectives on what's going on with the current scene and getting a chance to catch up with him. And as we close, Scott, also wanted to, you mentioned that you just got back from your honeymoon, and we wanted to congratulate you on your marriage.
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, I knew she was the perfect girl when she wasn't a wrestling fan before, but then as time went on, she'd go to WrestleMania with me every year. So, you know, it was a match made in heaven. She's a perfect girl for me. So it was an awesome honeymoon and great to be back and back in the thick of things.
You molded her.
Yes. Yeah,
she's definitely worth keeping.
Yeah,
all right, Scott, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you real soon.
All right, thanks a lot.